Blog Talk Radio.
Time for Sports Card Live. With Sports Card Radio's Ryan Tedders, Colin Tedders. MojoBreak.com's Dan Anderson. And your host, Doug Caskey. Dig it.
Pack Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another episode of Sports Card Live. As always, joined by Dan and Ryan. What's going on, guys?
What up? Yeah, what up?
Not much, man. We got another action-packed episode. We're going to be joined later by Layton, Rich Layton from LaytonSportsCards.com. We're going to do some reviews on last week's products, but it's been an epic couple weeks of product releases in the sports card industry. Big week this week with Tribute and National Treasure, so we're going to talk about that. And obviously, like I said, we're going to do the reviews, and we got some giveaways. We got some money to be saved on some breaks and some gift certificates to give away. So listen in to win. And wanted to kick it off with some sports talk. Did you guys catch that 300th save by Joe Nathan?
The shortstop, Joe Nathan, for the Giants?
The guy that got traded for A.J. Pierzynski. That was a good deal.
Oh,
for
no, man. Don't bring that up.
I think it was like the rights to sign A.J. Pierzynski. He wasn't even under contract when we got him.
We gave away
Joe Nathan, and then we gave A.J. Pierzynski just a boatload of money.
And then he hung out and played poker in the clubhouse and didn't play baseball. But you know what? Two championships later, maybe that was the deal that set it all off. Who knows? But, no, I wanted to mention how bad the officiating was. I don't know if you've seen the video. I actually happened to be listening to ESPN Radio this morning, and they were talking about it. And it was a three – so Nathan was pitching against the Rays. It was like – I think it was 5-4, bottom of the ninth, runner on second, 3-2 count. And Nathan – the Rangers have the lead 5-4, and Nathan, you know, closes. He gets a guy on second, 3-2 count, and there was this pitch that I'm not even joking, was low and outside by about 8 inches, and you could actually, if you listen to the playback, I think it's the Rangers announcer or the Rays announcer, and he goes and a walk. Oh my God, unbelievable! I mean, it was like such a horrible call that it just brings up the debate of. Like, should Major League Baseball institute, like, a better system? Because, like, if you compare it to other sports, if you compare referees, if you compare, you know, basketball and football, there's pretty much not a whole lot of room for error. But with baseball, with pitching, there's a lot of room for error. And you guys got guys that have high strike zones, that low strike zones. Do you think Ed Hockley has – he goes, no, you know, I'm a 12-yarder first down guy. You know, it's there should be some kind of standard, and it's – I know it's just one game, but there's been a lot of games won and lost by refs making bad calls, by umps making bad calls in baseball.
Well, I mean, you can go. You can go to the digital strike zone. I mean, they do it now. They have the technology where they have like the radar set up, and you can see if it's a strike or not. But that takes away the human element, and that's what baseball is all about. You can't. I mean. For over a century, it's been, you know, the human element of baseball. There's going to be bad calls. I mean, in any sport, even in football, there's bad calls. With football, you can review the play and they can make up for it and all that stuff. But in baseball, that's what keeps it true is the human element of blown calls or wider strike zones. And you always hear Kruko talk about how a guy has like a pitcher strike zone. Or he has a tight strike zone. It works good for batters and stuff like that. I don't think you can ever take out the human element. That's just baseball.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, like I think I was talking to Ryan off air about this, is like if they kind of institute, you know, some kind of digital strike zone that alerts the ump that it was within that zone. I mean, obviously there's guys that are 5'7", like Altuve, And there's guys that are like 6'4", like Hayward. Maybe Hayward's not quite 6'4", but he's taller than Altuve. So their strike zone changes. It gets bigger and smaller. So, I mean, if you have some kind of digital system, you know, it could be a little bit more accurate and it could be a level playing field for everybody. But I am torn as well about the human element. You know, you have to actually, as a pitcher, you have to adapt to that guy's strike zone. And maybe that's part of the mastery of being a pitcher, is knowing that this guy's strike zone is this and this guy's strike zone is that. So you have to adapt in the middle of the game. I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Ryan? What do you think about? Yeah, it's definitely about the scouting. What do you think about the, you know, maybe bringing MLB into a more digital age?
I could see it. I could see an implementing replay. I think one thing with baseball that's so difficult is the field is so large. And I go to a minor league game where there's only two umpires on the field at all times. So plays that are happening in the outfield are very, very far away, or a ball that gets ripped down the third baseline, the home plate umpire who's calling balls and strikes now has to call that play a third if it was fair or foul. And I've seen mistakes there where managers get thrown out of games. And it's just the field is so so big and the ball is really small. And it's
right.
Very hard to determine sometimes diving catches in the outfield if a ball landed fair or foul, and let alone the balls and strikes, which can be extremely difficult when you got a guy who's throwing 95 and then he comes at you with a 79-mile-an-hour curveball that's fooling the batter in the box, let alone the umpire who's, you know, kind of zeroed in on this 95-mile-an-hour fastball that might be coming that he's got to make a judgment call on within a blink of an eye if it's a ball or a strike. And then the big looping curveball comes in. Sometimes you see these umpires get frozen on that call. So it's a tough deal. I could see what QuesTech, the thing, I think they have it set up in Arizona and a couple other parks that actually does kind of try and digitally call balls and strikes. And that's how they kind of evaluate umpires. I think they still use it. I know they were using it for several years. And I think Curt Schilling one time broke one or something crazy like that, and he got fined for it. So it's a tough game to umpire. I think the other sports, it's a little smaller playing field, or at least with the NFL, it's a big playing surface, but they have umpires everywhere. They have umpires way in the back who are just making that pass interference call. They have umpires, you know, watching the quarterback and they're, you know,
right,
on the sidelines. With baseball, until you get to the World Series, you just have the umpires on the infield. You have one guy calling balls and strikes, obviously, and the rest of the outfield, you know, kind of those plays behind you, kind of behind the infield are, you know, you have to make a real quick kind of turn and look, locate the ball. You know, the umpires have to locate the ball and then make a judgment if it's fair or foul or if the guy caught it. So it's pretty difficult stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they did institute the instant replay for home runs. So, I mean, they did take that first step. So, if I know there was a lot of complaining about that, that there was some horrible, you know, foul home run calls or whatnot, that they actually do use that review system. So, you know, it's just that you guys got to watch that play if you haven't seen it. Just watch it. It's on E to the S to the P to the N.com. You can just see how horrible that call was. I mean, it was probably one of the worst strike threes I've heard. And you know, I don't know if it was, you know, because they were home, because it was 300 save, the umpire got kind of wrapped up in the hoopla of the game and, you know, reacted, but it was really bad call. So, you know, I feel bad for Tampa Bay fans. You know, it's just one game out of 162, but man, so we'll see. I mean, maybe they institute more instant replays, but I don't know. I also heard a
baseball game is already like 3 hours, though. If you started like replaying like balls and strikes, man, you're looking at like a 4 or 5 hour game. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, it's not an action packed sport as it is compared to
I mean, that's why I love baseball, though. It's like the human element. I mean, there's umpires that blow plays like blatantly, and that's just kind of that's kind of the nature of it. That's like, that's what people love about it, man. It's like an imperfect game.
Yep. Yeah. Well, look at the guy that had the no hitter taken away from him. Or was it a perfect game or no hitter? The guy from Detroit a couple years back.
Perfect,
it was
perfect game.
Yeah. Yeah. Right at the last play. And the guy was, I mean, he apologized at the end saying, I know he was safe, but my judgment call was, or I mean, I know he was out, but my judgment call was he was safe. And I mean, that guy, I mean, that lost that, I'm sure that lost that pitcher some money, because when his contract's up, having a perfect game on your resume might get you a couple more $1 million than not.
Who was that pitcher?
God, you know what? Who was it on? Detroit. Anybody in the chat? Yeah, exactly. If he had a perfect game, I would have remembered. But being that he didn't, you know, I can't remember.
It's on the tip of my tongue. It's like, it's like Armando or something. Armando.
Armando Galarraga.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Maybe somebody. Yep, Galarraga in the chat confirming Jayhawk. So, yeah, but if it was, I mean, we all remember, well, maybe because we're Giants fans, but Jonathan Sanchez had the no-hitter. So, and he got, he got traded to Kansas City after that. I'm sure when Kansas City was looking at Jonathan Sanchez's resume, they were like, oh, well, that guy threw a no-hitter. We'll take him.
No, they were like, we know that Melky Cabrera's on roids. We'll take anything for him.
Couple bats. Yeah, so and props to Louisville for winning yesterday. I'm not a big college basketball fan, but I did watch some of the highlights, and it was one of the games for the ages. I know a lot of people were watching it, and Ware had that big injury with the leg, which is just one of the most gruesome videos I've ever seen. I talked to Ryan. Ryan hadn't seen the video. Did you catch that video of Ware when he broke his leg in half, basically? In one of the first games of the Final Four or of the tournament,
I've seen pictures of it. I haven't seen the video.
Yeah, it was definitely a freak injury. I don't know. It was just a normal, you know, jump up, try to block the shot, and just came down and it was crazy, man. So I mean that gave him a little bit of motivation, and they already were a good team, obviously, anyway, but. Man, that was crazy.
They were a number one seed, and I think Michigan was like a number four seed.
Yeah,
Timmy Hardaway's kid on Michigan.
Yep. Going to be a pretty good pro. It seems like that kid's pretty talented. So, but yeah, props to Louisville on that. I didn't get a chance to catch many tournament games this year, just with baseball and breaking cards and stuff. It's been kind of tough, but. Caught some highlights of that last night. You know, another guy who's tearing it up, going back to baseball, remember Chris Davis? The guy's got like freaking 17 RBIs. I think he's got 6 home runs or something. And I know
Captain,
the guy used
Captain,
to
strike. Captain Strikeout?
Yeah, guy's just on fire right now. I mean, Baltimore's looking pretty good, but this guy is just like tearing it up, like heads and tails above everybody right now. 417 batting average, 4 home runs, 17 RBI so far, and the card industry's kind of noticed. His cards have already kind of spiked. I mean, the guy's 27, so, I mean, he's been in the league for, it looks like, 5 years. I know he's been tossed around the minors a lot, but, man, the kid came out and been just knocking the ball around. So he usually, like, last couple of years, he's been striking out a lot. So maybe he finally figured it out. He's only got 4 strikeouts so far and 24 at-bats, so.
He has 4 homers. You know who else has 4 homers? Dexter Fowler. He's been hitting. I was listening to the Giants game and they were talking about him and he's been tearing it up, and that's like one guy that I've always been kind of a fan. I mean, being a Giants fan, you see the Rockies a lot, and every time I see that guy play, I'm like, man, that guy's got talent. He's got speed. He's got a little bit of pop. He can hit for average. He's killer like defensive outfielder, like center fielder. Actually, I don't even know if he's center fielder anymore, because I know Eric Young is on the team too.
Yeah.
He's
center fielder, but I think Eric Young's a left fielder, so I think they're left and center.
Okay.
But yeah, they're actually they were on a 5-game winning streak until
They were 5-1 until they ran into Mad Bum.
Blowing snot rockets out there. You ever notice, Matt, everybody's probably like, you guys are just Homer talk. You ever notice how many snot rockets that guy blows out a game? Like, Jesus Christ, blow your nose in the dugout, dude. He's like every pit, every batter, he's just snot rocketing, dude. I feel bad for the other pitcher that's got to step on that mound afterwards, just freaking snot around the mound. It's like, come on, man.
and it gets on the ball, and then Buster Posey touches the ball afterwards. I mean, it just is like a gross situation, like, out there. When he, I mean, he's a straight Southern, like, boy. I mean, he's, like, Southern to the T and stuff. Lives on a farm, I think, in South Carolina or something. I mean, the guy goes home and literally, like, has no TV, no internet, no nothing. He just, like, lives on a farm, and then he comes to San Francisco and, you know, so has pitched really well for the last many years. So he's a... He's quite the player. Chris, who's the guy who has four home runs? Chris Davis? Chris Young? Or
Chris,
not
Chris, Chris Davis, Davis, yeah.
I would sell right now. I mean, wow, unless he's taking something, unless he's taking the Melky Cabrera milk or something. I mean, I would just sell right now. Sell right. Dexter Fowler, he's a little different. He's kind of a speedy guy, and he's always been, like Dan said, he's kind of always been an interesting player with skills, but high strikeout guy who's just hot the first week of the season, oh my God, take advantage and sell everything that you have, because by and large, these guys can always return to form and, you know, will hit 275 with some bombs or whatever, but nobody will really care about them. So,
yeah, he'll probably wind up the season.
Hot guys.
Yeah, he'll wind up with 150 strikeouts this year. I mean, those free swingers, I mean, they really don't change much. You know, speaking of home runs, you know who's leading the league in home runs?
Davis?
No, that would be the obvious. Justin Upton. Justin Upton has six home runs.
Wow.
So
for, he is the Braves, right?
Yeah, he's on the Braves now. Yep.
Him and BJ, right?
Yeah, BJ and Justin both on the Braves. Six home runs, eight RBI. So he's obviously there's not by many people on the bases when he's hitting the bombs, but. Six home runs, batting .423. So Arizona's kind of probably wishing they had Justin back on the squad still, but, you know, doing well for Atlanta, it looks like, early.
What'd they get for him? Did they get anybody good? Because he's good.
You know, they got Prado.
Did they get a prospect or something, or a good prospect for anybody?
I hope so, because now I'm thinking about that trade, and I'm like, they just trade Justin Upton for Martin Prado? There had to be some prospects in there.
95 mile an hour flamethrower that we don't know about yet. There's got to be one or two of those.
I hope so, because either that, it was like a salary dump.
It could have been. You know, I know he was due a lot of money. I think it was the end of his deal. Looks like they got top pitching prospect Randy Delgado as well,
okay.
Which I haven't heard of. Nick Ahmed, Brandon Drury. And Prado, they got like four guys,
for them.
So they, you know, maybe this Randy Delgado turns out to be somebody good. So,
Prado's an all star.
That's Randall Delgado. Actually, he's pitched in the majors. Yeah, he's pretty good. So actually, that's not bad for the Diamondbacks there. But
Justin Upton is a beast. So.
I know. He's obviously the better Upton out of the two. But they're like, Braves are like, we can't pick which Upton. We'll just get them both. I mean, just figure out who's better.
Why not?
You know, Shane.
I think they got a discount with BJ. BJ.
Yeah.
He talk about a guy who came out of the gates, like highly touted prospect. I think he was like a first pick in the draft or something like that. And they're like, this guy's going to be the next greatest player ever, and he just never really had a great season. I think the year that they went to the World Series, he had a pretty decent season, but he just never really put it together.
Yeah. The name like BJ, I'm sure he gets teased a lot too, you know, so. I don't know where I was going with that, but I just, you know, thought I'd mention it. Going into NFL jersey sales, so they released the top-selling jerseys of 2012. See if you guys can name, out of the 10, see if you can name a few.
Troy Polamalu.
No Troy Polamalu, believe it or not.
Wow. Aaron Rodgers?
Number 7.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Number 5.
Peyton Manning,
number 2.
I hope he's not up there, but Colin Kaepernick.
Number 4.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Wow. Cam Newton. Tim Tebow, Cam Newton.
No Cam Newton or Tebow, nope.
Wow.
You still haven't named the number one yet.
It's RG3.
Yep, RG3, number one selling jersey. And believe broke some records, too, on overall sales. They don't list how many were sold, but these stats come from NFLShop.com. So I think to get an exact number, we got to contact China and the counterfeit sales. You know,
that's
to get
what
the
I was
exact
about
number.
Does that include fake jerseys? Because I guarantee whatever sales they report at the NFL shop, it's probably 10 times that for the jersey market.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they
crank
those things out for $20 a pop and stuff, and the patches, and some of them look decent, and then some of them are not that good, and they stink and stuff. So, wow. I know a lot about it. We could have a whole show on fake jersey market. Oh my God, I know quite a bit actually about that industry. I mean, first of all, it's illegal to sell fake jerseys. It's not illegal to buy them. So if you buy them, don't feel bad about buying them because an authentic jersey sells. Authentic jerseys like $150, $175, upwards of $200 to get an authentic, you know, jersey. Now they're making these kind of replica Fenics that are like $99 or whatever, and I think Nike and Reebok used to have the license, and they've done a good job. But wow, dude, the fake market. I mean, when Kaepernick started going, dude, wow. I mean, I was getting emails to buy these Kaepernick fake jerseys. I'm like, I don't even do this stuff. Like, what the hell is these fake Kaepernick jerseys? I mean, his stuff blew up. Or when a guy changes teams, I mean, fake market, it's incredible. Like, there'll be fakes within a week or two when a guy changes the team or the hot rookie or when Reggie Bush, when Reggie Bush in 06 and Vince Young, everybody wanted a Reggie Bush jersey. They had those, like, 3 days after the draft and stuff. You could buy Reggie Bush Saints fake jerseys before you could buy the real ones. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
They crank this stuff out over there.
Yeah, me and Dan actually had a buddy that would do it, so we know a lot about it, too, where they would literally, I think he was paying, like $20 a jersey, and they'd come in this, like, freaking black garbage bag from China, and they'd have a label on it, and they'd all be shoved in there, so you'd order, I remember he would order, like, 20 to 50 at a time, right, and they just, I mean, it would come in this EMS, because I think that's the shipping from China, when you mentioned stink, I remember him opening them, and, oh, man, it smelled like, I don't even know, like, some kind of fish and bad plastic. I just saw it thrown into one, like literally they boated it. They got in the water at one point, a couple of fishes, like they shipped it with sushi at the same time. But I mean, some of them were like, I think the biggest thing I noticed when he would, cause I got a few, I think I got like back in the day, I got a Patrick Willis from him. And I mean, you'd have to look pretty close. I think the biggest thing with them was the strings. Were hanging off like crazy. But you know, you just got to snip them here and there, but I didn't feel bad about getting beer or mustard on my, $30 Willis jersey. But if I got a $250 jersey, I think I'd probably put plastic on it when I went to the game.
but you could also tell it, like, it seemed like some of the attention to detail wasn't quite there. Like some of the patches were like kind of off-centered or something, but
right.
Yeah, like you said, like there was like strings falling off of it, but I mean, for like $30, I mean, like you said, man, you can like you can take that to a game and you're just like, whatever, man, I'll just buy another one for $30 if I mess this one up. So plus, I mean I'm going to like a hostile environment, so I'm probably getting like churros and like hot dogs thrown at me, so I don't want to wear like a really nice jersey or anything.
Yeah, I remember I was actually at the Rams Niner game with Dan when he got a churro thrown at his head. So
wow.
You know, wow. From an unruly Niner fan. So the next year, Dan decides we're not getting uppers. We're going to go a little bit lower. Maybe there'll be less riffraff that won't throw churros at his head anymore.
And that, I mean, I was right. I didn't have anybody threaten my life or anything. It was a good day.
Yeah, it's around. To round out the rest of that list, so yeah, RG3 was one, Peyton Manning two, Ray Lewis three. So I mean, Ray Lewis has been on the Ravens for what, 17 years. So it's pretty. Maybe it's because it's last year. Everybody's like, I got to get his jersey. Kaepernick number four, Brady five, Luck six, Rodgers seven, Victor Cruz number 8.
Wow.
Eli Manning, number 9, and Patrick Willis, number 10. So two Niners. I didn't see any Rams on that list, actually. No Sam Bradford.
No Michael Agnew. Oh, wait, that's probably – Top's probably swooped all those up.
Yeah, all those are on cards right now, yeah. If you open a product, you could probably get the whole jersey in the case.
I'm waiting for the one person to basically, like, sew a jersey together, like, out of all the event-worn jerseys of Michael Agnew or Isaiah Pete or something like that. That would be amazing, like a collage.
Well, they could get them on the cheat for sure. But I've always wondered, I assume Panini and Topps are on the up and up, but, you know, I've seen a lot of these jerseys. Like I said, one of my buddies used to sell the fake jerseys. I mean, how do we know that those weren't the jerseys from China that they were wearing at the event worn? I mean, is there any kind of Nike? Because there's no Nike logos on the boxes or anything. So how do we know that those are actual made by Nike? I mean, there's Nike logos on some of the patches. But, I mean, who's to say they were like, let's just get these for $20 a piece rather than paying – I'm sure they got a discount because they're Panini and Topps, but I don't know.
If you look at the stitching, if you get, like, a nice, big, like, multicolored jersey piece in a card and you look at the stitching, look at the attention to detail. I mean, it's legit. I mean,
yeah.
There's, like – they're all, like, super well done. There's no strings hanging off and stuff like that. I think that's because I've thought the same thing. I'm like, well, where are these jerseys actually coming from? Are they the jerseys that they're swooping up on eBay for like $20 a piece, or like these legitimate jerseys? And if you look at like a nice multicolored patch, you'll see the attention to detail, and it's a legitimate jersey.
Well,
and
they're like 10x
jerseys. I mean, the famous Mark Ingram picture where he had like 40 jerseys on or whatever, and they like run down to his ankles practically, and they're like double zero and stuff. They're definitely like custom. They probably are made or whatever, kind of made by Nike or Reebok or whatever back in the day, Reebok. But man, they're definitely like custom, huge, like 10x size jerseys because they stuff like 50 of them on Mark Ingram all at one time and call it player worn. So
yeah, and that's what a lot of collectors don't know, especially if you're new to this hobby. You know, and these rookie premier guys, there's 30 to 35 of them every year, and they're invited before the season to take this rookie photo shoot, and that's where they get all the game worn jerseys from. And that Mark Ingram photo should have never been released. I'm surprised somebody let them take a photo. Maybe it was somebody from Mark Ingram's posse that took it. But there's a photo of Mark Ingram literally with 25 jerseys on. So when you think that Mark Ingram actually wore the jersey that's on your card, he may have touched one part of it. I mean, or not. So, and they want to get – I mean, these guys are young guys. They just got a lot of money. I'm sure they don't want to spend a whole lot of time putting on – 85 jerseys, so, you know, they just put them on as quick as possible, so. I don't know. I would like to find out how many jerseys they actually put on at this rookie premiere, because, we're talking about 35 products at least in an NFL season, and you're talking about most of the time print runs of $4.99 or higher in each set. So you're talking about 30 sets times 500 different jersey pieces of every player. It seems to me that there's got to be like 300 jerseys of each guy, at least.
It's got to be a ton of jerseys, because they're huge jerseys. So it's not like a form-fitting, they're regular jersey. I mean, it's a huge jersey, and they put them on. I mean, that could have been like Mark Ingram's fifth photo. Like they had him put on 20, but then they couldn't squeeze any more on him, so he took them off, and then they put 20 more on him. I mean, you know, it's like a cattle line there. They just like brand these guys, so they get all their content for their product for the NFL, pretty much. I mean, it's all there, pretty much. Or they lock them in for the autographs. You know, they get some of the autographs later on in the season, but they get a lot there. They get all their stickers probably right there. So
I'd like to see like an archived like warehouse, because you know, like. Every year, like, they probably took, like, an Andrew Luck jersey, and they're like, okay, we're going to hold on to this one and make make cards with this one for like when he's a vet. So like 3 years down the line, we're gonna have a couple jerseys that we can still use and stuff like that. They probably have a huge warehouse full of just like, you know, backstock jerseys and stickers and all that stuff that are just sitting there, which would be pretty cool thing to see.
Yeah, they should let somebody tour that and film that, you know, just to say, you know, I know they've showed photos when they did Timeless Treasures last year, 2011 football Timeless Treasures. They actually showed pictures of the jerseys they cut up and what games they were from and stuff. So they did that. But, yeah, I would love to see, you know, which jerseys, how many they have of each guy and stuff. That would be cool. It would be a nice video to put on YouTube and especially get some press for some of these companies. But before we bring Rich on, I want to talk about the new Topps Redemption thing that I was talking about with you guys off the air. But so apparently for outstanding redemptions, Topps is now instituting a new program where they're going to send you a card, an autograph that's supposedly better of somebody that's – it's a card that's not in any set. So there was a guy on Freedom Cardboard that actually – he says he turned in a 2011 Marquee Cody Ross dual relic auto, and instead he got a Don Sutton auto from a new – in parentheses, set. So it's a set that's supposedly not going to be released. So it's not going to be any kind of set. So it's going to be a unique card. I mean, I like the idea of it because it's actually maybe creating a market for that, and it's also giving Topps some kind of transparency that these cards aren't pulled out of any set, because I've seen people get Darvishes from Finest and stuff, and it's like, why weren't those in the product? So if they're doing something like this, it's actually more transparent. But Dan actually has a story about that as well. So go share your little envelope you got yesterday from Topps.
All right. So yesterday I get home and I have a TriStar bubble mailer in my mailbox, and I'm all sweet. The only redemption I have from them is a I think it was 2011 Topps Marquee. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
2011 Topps Marquee Tyson Ross redemption. And I mean, it's probably a $4 card, maybe. And I completely forgot about it, and I'm like, oh, whatever. And I figured, I'm like, oh, they filled the redemption. I'm like, I got my Tyson Ross. I'm stoked. So I open it up, and it's a Jeremy Hellickson auto from 2012 Museum Collection, numbered to like 183. And I'm like, well, that's cool, I guess. I mean, it's a $6 card, so I guess I came up $2 from like a $4 card to a $6 card. So I'm like, yeah, so that's what I was thinking. And, yeah, they have, like, a little letter with it, and it says that you are receiving a card that's not in any set, and they're sorry about the outstanding redemption and all that stuff. And, you know, it was a really nice gesture, but I look at the card, and I go on eBay, and I'm like, but you can buy these all day long for, like, $6. This isn't, like, this is just a regular Jeremy Hellickson auto numbered to 189 or something like that.
So it's from Museum, I said, right?
Yeah, Museum. So I didn't get my exclusive Don Sutton auto. I guess Cody Ross dual relic auto is worth more than a Tyson Ross.
Well, that's kind of a Ross situation there.
I know. Did I get screwed? I don't know.
I mean, maybe if you pulled a Ross from Friends, maybe you'd get like a Babe Ruth auto.
I don't know. It seemed like a bonus to me. I was like, I'm cool with that.
Are you sure that Hellickson was like not in the set? Maybe they made the card and never made it in the set. And because I know he was a redemption for a while that never got filled. So maybe they started sending out replacement redemptions on his stuff, and then they had those come in later. But eBay, I don't know.
It was numbered to like 189 or something, and there was tons and tons of them on eBay. So. Huh. I mean, it's on card. I mean, I don't know. What's Tyson Ross up to these days?
I don't know. Did he ever play for the Ports?
Yeah, he did.
Did he?
Yeah.
He's like a big boy, isn't he? He's like 6'5". I mean, not big as in wide, but big as in tall, right?
He's tall. He's definitely tall and throws pretty hard. I know he got hurt, I want to say, either at the beginning of last year. I think it was pretty serious, too. So I think he's, might be on the long road to recovery.
Yeah. Huh.
So, yeah, that's my story with that. I mean, I'm, you know, it seems like Topps is noticing that their customer service has been subpar at best, and they're definitely trying to make it better. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'll take that. You know, and it seems like if I got one, there's probably tons of other people who are getting this stuff. So, you know, I mean, it's a step in the right direction. So, yeah, I give it a thumbs up on that. So, pretty stoked.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
Jeremy Hellickson
for sell off for trade. So.
Start a PC, man. Start a PC. Anybody in the chat want to offer Dan something? He likes Will Clark, but he'd probably have to throw in something else to get the Will Clark. He does like Isaiah Pede. So
I will take an Isaiah Pede.
Oh, there you go. Jeremy Hellickson for IP. Let's get a Twitter trade or in chat trade. But what was I going to say? Me and Ryan talking about this Topps Redemption thing. It's kind of funny that they didn't actually should have like said something on Twitter or like on their website or sent out an email saying that they're doing this, because this actually probably give them props, you know, props to Topps, like we say, you know, because it's like a good little program, you know, that they're honoring redemptions. But like instead we have to hear it from somebody that gets a redemption rather than them coming out and saying this is what we're going to do. It's maybe they don't want the backlash of people that aren't getting their redemptions to say, hey, where's my Don Sutton or something. Maybe they don't want to do that, but I thought it would be good news if they came out and said, hey, this is what we're going to be doing, but I guess they decided to just let us find out through forums.
Where's my Jeremy Hellickson?
There's always like a shroud of mystery around Topps, so I think this is just par for the course, that it, you know, it's always very mysterious. You don't get a whole lot of communication with them. They're very glad to show you, you know, their hits from upcoming products and contests and MMA contests and stuff. But they don't want to tell you about this somewhat interesting, pretty cool idea, how they're going to supposedly be, you know, redeeming these cards with special cards that were not inserted in sets. And so I would encourage all collectors out there to share their stories on forums, on Twitter, on Facebook, on their own website or wherever, so that we can find out about this process, this new process, and you know, we can kind of gauge, well, you were redeeming this card, you waited 8 months, you waited whatever, 2 years, and then you ended up with this card. And we can kind of see, well, okay, well, maybe it was worth the wait, maybe it wasn't. But I don't know, Ross for Jeremy Hellickson, Cody Ross for Don Sutton. I'd have to see the scan of the Don Sutton. I know what the Jeremy Hellickson looked like. I think those were redemptions. So that is interesting that you got. So I'm almost 100% positive those were originally redemptions in Museum Collection last year.
I think
it was
you're
like
right.
Redemption in almost every product, like practically.
He was, yeah. Jeremy Hellickson did not, like, he didn't sign anything. So I'm thinking that they replaced those redemptions with something else. And then Jeremy Hellickson was like, oh, maybe I should sign today. Signed the card.
I just figured it out. They're replacing anybody who got a Jeremy Hellickson, they're replacing it with a Tyson Ross. And anybody who got a Tyson Ross is getting a Jeremy Hellickson.
Or anybody
Ross.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
Well, maybe we can start a section on your forum on sportscardradio.com about, you know, what redemption you came out of your replacement redemption, and we can, you know, weigh it out over a course of 6 months and see what stories are good and what stories are bad and see what the percentage is. That would be kind of cool.
I'd have to. And track what goes on all the on other forums. So I know people almost daily, they post, hey, I got a, you know, I got a replacement from Topps or Panini, or here's what I got, you know, good or bad. Here's what I got. And those are always kind of interesting stories to see what happened, how long they waited, and what was the whole communication process. Because those are delicate situations. You know, some of these cards are worth a lot of money, obviously. So, and some people are really tied to the cards. So hopefully Topps is a little more proactive in communicating their plan. But if they don't want to do that, hopefully it's a good plan. Hopefully whatever they have in store is good. And people end up happy. So far we're almost two for two. I think Cody Frost for Don Sutton, that's good.
and Tyson Ross for Jerry Ellison. That's a small win. That is a small win for the collecting community. So
yeah, I'm looking at it as a victory. That's a victory. I'm into that. But I mean, what if you had like a Willie Mays redemption? Because I know Mays has been redemption in a handful of Topps products, and they send you a Don Sutton or a Jeremy Hellickson or both. That's not going to equal. That's not going to equal Willie Mays.
Yeah. Well, there's like a Willie Mays redemption for a silver ball or something that's been out of tribute from either 2011 or 2012. But I think there was like only one or two of them produced. It might even be a 101. And I think I've heard that guy's still waiting on it. It's like an actual gold or silver ball.
The golden figure.
Yeah.
2012 top series one.
Yeah, like somebody would say, I remember somebody at the summit saying they're still waiting on that ball or whatnot. So, but
I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about that skit that you did a couple months ago with the customer service. And what was the card they give you, or what was the you're waiting? It was like the little skit you did on our first show.
The Ryan Leaf one.
Ryan Leaf, yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to play that again sometime.
Looking for my Willie Mays, here's your Jeremy Hellickson. Here you go. Hold on to that one.
John Rocker. There you go. Marcus Vick. No. But we'll go ahead and bring on Leighton here. We're going to do our review segment. Maybe we can switch up the review segments a little bit. I kind of put you on the spot here, Ryan, but maybe you can kind of lead the review segment of these products.
Why not?
We'll kind of do like a quick hitter on all three of these. We're going to review Select, Gypsy Queen, and Playbook, and we'll do it fairly quickly, but we want to give your guys' take on it. I know Rich busted a lot of cases of all of it, and so did we. So go ahead and bring on Rich here. And what's up, Rich?
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
What's up, Rich?
We got Rich here from LeightonSportsCards.com. Check out the site. We'll listen in a little bit later. We're going to have a kind of a nice coupon code for his site. So at the end of the review segment, we'll go ahead and give you that little money-saving coupon as well. So, but go ahead and lead us in on Select, Ryan, and maybe Rich can start it off. You want to ask a question, and we'll give our thoughts on it.
Yeah, let's talk about Select. I think I even saw some of the hits that Rich was pulling. I thought Kyrie autograph and some – I know they have some red parallels out of there. Rich, so how many cases did you open? What was kind of the breakdowns of some of the bigger pulls that you had, and then your overall, I guess, impression of the product? Because this product had a lot of hype, kind of with Prism doing so well in the basketball card market, and now we have the Select, which is kind of the same ilk. Some of the cards look nice. The green cards at the Summit looks nice. So did it meet the hype, and just your overall impressions of the product?
Okay. First off, Ryan, it's nice talking to you again, man. It was nice meeting you at the summit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a good time, man. And, yeah, I opened, let's see, we did two cases, that's all. I didn't pre-order enough. You know, it was just one of those things. I should have kind of just gone with my gut and gotten some more cases because the price went up so quickly on the secondary market, and it's still up, considering the pre-sale price and everything. But we did two cases about 2 days apart. I really don't have much of a barometer to gauge the overall product on two cases of cards, just because the first case was so ridiculously good. I feel like we got, like, a hot case or something, or you know, one of those freak cases, if you will. We had four golds. We had the Kyrie auto to 99. One of the golds was a Damian Lillard. It was just a ridiculous case. And then the second case, I think, was more along the average case yield, if you will. We pulled like a Durant auto relic to 199. We pulled a Kid Gilchrist Prism auto to 99. And actually, I think we only had one gold, which I thought was odd because everything I had seen before was coming, yielding about three golds per case. So I don't know if it got shorted or what happened on that one, but we only got one gold on the second case. And, you know, overall product value, overall product look, design, feel, I'd give it an A plus, or at least an A. The base cards are gorgeous. The inserts are beautiful. The actual condition of the cards coming out of the packs, I don't think I had one card that was, you know, bent, scratched, damaged. So they did a good job with quality control on it. I think with the European / Asian market involved with the secondary market on eBay and everything else, it's just the prices on some of the cards are going through the roof. So it's definitely a hot, hot product, and I had a lot of fun opening it. I mean, we haven't busted a case, an actual case of basketball product in quite some time. So to get back into that was, you know, with Panini Select, that was a lot of fun, and I hope to do more sooner or later if the price comes back down a little bit. But, you know.
Is it a different customer? Is it a different customer, Rich, that's coming in and buying into these breaks? Is it, or can you even tell that? Or do people who bust, you know, a lot of this football stuff that's been so hot, are they, you know, are they getting into this basketball stuff? What, can you even tell that what your customer base is kind of with the select?
Well, I'll tell you, we actually picked up a few, at least three or four new customers with that last basketball break that we did. We have a few customers that tend to break pretty much every sport, or at least multi-sport, if you will, you know, football, basketball, or football, basketball, baseball. So it's kind of a cross. We did pick up some new customers because of it. I think they were happy with what they got. I think they're happy with the service. So hopefully it becomes, you know, they become long-term customers from it. It's a bit of a different crowd. It's a bit of a different feel in the chat room. I think every sport kind of, at least from my take on things, every sport kind of, they have their own style of a group, or an own style of a feel to the chat room and a feel to the overall break. Maybe it's just a difference in, you know, the type of population getting into the breaks. I have no idea what it is, but I feel like every time we break a different sport, the overall feel of the break and the overall feel of the crowd in the room that night tends to be a little bit different for each sport. So it was good. It was, you know, it was almost a little bit of a learning curve. I was struggling with some names like Dan does with hockey. So, you know.
and Doug for that matter.
You know, so, you know, we had a good time with it. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully we entertained some people and they had a good time and they'll be coming back for more.
Yeah, I mean, so, I agree with you about having a just a real quick butt in here. I agree about having a select market, no pun intended there, but it seems like more overseas purchases on basketball than anything, even more so than hockey.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. We had, we just shipped case two, yesterday, I believe it was. We sorted it, and today we shipped it. So there was seven international packages in it, I believe.
Wow. Nice.
So that's pretty good tale of the tape there.
That's awesome. That's good. So, Doug, I know it's going to be hard to beat a gold Lillard, a Kyrie autograph to 99, three golds in a case. Did you guys open any select? And then what do you think about it?
We haven't done our case, but we've done six boxes. So we did six boxes on release. We got one gold out of the six, and we got a Kevin Durant auto number to 49 on card, which was actually a beautiful card. But I agree with Rich. The inserts are nice. You know, it's the right amount of cards for a break, you know, good collectability with the base. I've seen some of the Lillard inserts go for $30, not numbered. So it's nice that a set is bringing back collectability to non-numbered insert cards. So that's what's great. I mean, and being that the golds don't have an autograph or a jersey on them, and some of them are going for astronomical figures, it's just a great thing for the hobby. But I think it's probably – I like it a little bit better than Prism, maybe because there's four hits as opposed to two. The cards, it just seems like the evolution that in Panini's overall products, it seems like it's a step above, it's evolving. And, yeah, I mean, I got even a more small sample size with it. So, but, you know, good product, and we'll probably do another case in the next few weeks of it. So, but it's definitely caught a lot of buzz, and boxes are skyrocketing. I mean, they started like 120, 130, and they're up to like 160, 170, and I foresee them going up to 200 to 250 possibly on the retail side of things as well.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely can be a $200 box. And like you said, I wholeheartedly agree with the collectability of the base cards. A lot of their past basketball products that were semi-base heavy, not many set collectors were really going after it. Whereas with this, I feel like, I mean, seeing the Damian Lillard base card is going for like double digits. I mean, it's like $10, $12 or something like that on eBay right now. That's just insane. So
yeah.
That alone adds collectability to the set, just the base set. And, you know, that's an A-plus in my book from Panini, and they did an outstanding job.
Yeah, I mean, some of their marketing dollars or whatever R&D dollars are going to work, because if you archive one of our old podcasts, we were like, why is Bowman Chrome number to 500 selling for $50, but you get a limited baseball number to 25 and it's a $2 card? So whatever Panini did, they put some research and development dollars into how we're going to make money on just numbered variations, whatever they did,
mm-hmm.
at work.
Yeah.
So gotta love Panini. I'm going to get an I Love Panini tattoo somewhere on my body. Forearm or something, you know. I'm just going to, you know.
Well, we'll see if you love Panini after talking about Playbook, which I'm sure both you guys open. What, we'll start with Doug this time. What do you think about Playbook? And I know we even talked about it kind of in relation it to, for it coming out so close to kind of their marquee product, National Treasures. So what do you think of Playbook value-wise? Were people eating it up? And then what'd you get in your cases?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've done 4 cases of it so far, so you can tell our clientele is a little bit more football heavy as opposed to basketball heavy. But I think it's a great product. I mean, the price point is, you know, close to $200, but you're going to get a pretty sweet book usually in one box. I mean, the books I think are head and tails nicer than last year's books. What they did is they did an acetate. And there's a couple different book designs, but the marquee one, the one that everybody's after, is the acetate. And it's one side's got a single color jersey and the other side's got a multicolored jersey. And then the auto's above that. And it's a die cut photo of the guy. And I mean, you got to see him in person if you haven't. A lot of people that listen probably have already seen it. It's a really, really nice design. I mean, it's 100 times better than last year's. I mean, last year's was great too, but it was kind of their first entry into making a book card football product, and it's just improving as years go on. You know, they got vets in there, they've got legends. My only knock on it would be, I think they could have went without an extra book card, because there's 2 book cards every box, and one's going to be just a relic book card. More often than not, it's a single color relic book card. So me, I like to add value to book cards, so one book card would have been enough for me. As far as big pulls, we pulled a number to 5 RG3 book card auto, 4 color. We pulled a 101 Tannehill NFL Shield. We pulled a RG3 number to 49. I think those are probably our biggest couple luck autos. So, you know, it breaks pretty decently. It's 40 hits a case. So, I mean, there's going to be a few people that don't get cards, but it's part of the gamble when it comes to the breaks. But overall, I know we're going to do more of it, and I think it's a pretty good value.
What do you think about Playbook, Rich?
I'm pretty much right there with Doug. I'm a little upset that it got pushed back. I think if it had come out when it was originally intended, I think it would have done a lot better. I'm not sure how I feel about it coming out a week before National Treasures football. I think it takes away from the appeal. I think people got it just to get it, just to kind of get into possibly getting your RG3, Andrew Luck books, the autos, you know, for a box that's $200 or less per box. I'm a huge playbook fan. I was a huge playbook fan of 2011. I opened a lot of it when it first came out. I still open a lot of it to this day. I think it's great for mixers. I think it's great for just the fun to open. They stepped it up. They did a good job. I feel like the booklets, the acetates are nice. They're, you know, I love the design. I shouldn't say I like, because I really do love the design. I think it's pretty good value. Like Doug said, wholeheartedly agree. I think they could have put a little bit more into the one bigger booklet. And as a side note, I remember the original sell sheet actually stating three booklets per box. I could be wrong, but I could have sworn that it said three booklets per box this year instead of one, with a possibility of two. I think it was, they said a three booklet box, but it came out, it was two books a box. That's fine. That's neither here nor there, I guess. It's a little too late to complain about it now. But I feel like the acetate booklets were a little bit of strata on steroids, the clear cut.
Yeah.
I think it was a clear cut in a booklet. So they kind of pulled away from it a little bit. A little bit heavy on the sticker autos with the actual rookie autos. But at least, I mean, the only thing that isn't live in the product that I wish it was the RG3 booklet auto. Russell Wilson as a redemption, which kind of was upsetting because he signed for Contenders just recently, so I guess it was a little too late for the pack out on Playbook. That was a little bit of a downside for me. But like Doug said, pretty group break friendly product. Not too many hitless teams. I believe the Falcons don't have a lot of hits in it, and the Saints are a little bit light on the hits. But I think a lot of the other teams have a ton of possibilities on good cards out of the product, and I think a lot of it's still out there, actually. A lot of one-on-ones haven't been pulled. As for our bigger hits, I mean, we did, at least five cases on release day. Four out of the five cases actually had Andrew Luck autos, and then the fifth had an RG3. So we're really heavy on the Lucks. We're a little light on the RG3s. We did a personal case for a customer of ours, and he had an RG3 auto to 25, the Swagger to 25, nice. I believe it was. Yeah, it was a beautiful card. Multicolor. It was really nice. We pulled, a 1-of-1 Robert Turbin booklet and a 1-of-1 Michael Floyd booklet. And it was a lot of, I'll be honest with you, it was a lot of mediocre to slightly above mediocre hits with not that many, the blah hits. There weren't that many blah hits, you know, the low end. It was a lot of middle end hits, which I think will carry the product for quite some time, or at least I hope it does.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it is, and not to just say just because I do breaks and you do breaks, but I think it is better consumed in a break. I've heard a lot of horror stories of people buying boxes for $200 and them getting that Michael Agnew book, Kevin Zeitler auto, Casey Hayward auto, and like a Nick Foles redemption. So it's like, there's
it
a lot of room
for,
it's more often than not you're not going to get, but there, if you do a case break, you're bound to get at least two or three big cards. So roll the dice for, a third of the price of a box and you could do good. But actually, I pulled up the sell sheet, so it's a little confusing. So maybe the way they worded it, so it says box break. It says one on-card rookie booklet, right? And then it says one other autograph. And then it says two booklets. So to me, that looks like three booklets.
Three booklets,
but
right.
I think what they meant is that you're guaranteed two booklets per box break.
Hmm.
So it's very confusing on the sell sheet. I don't think anybody's called them out on it. I mean, still, other than that, it's a great product, and I'm actually kind of glad they didn't put in a dumpy relic booklet as a third hit. I'd rather have an auto like they did. But, you know, seeing some of the relic booklets that are coming out, like the, you know, the ones that say Aggies or Milk Can, you know, I think they could have done without a few of those. But, yeah. I mean, what was your take on Playbook? You busted the case on Friday. What did you think about it?
I thought the those acetate die cut. I see the similarities of Strata, but man, for a football booklet, it may be the sharpest looking booklet I've ever seen. Especially that RG3 that you pulled. They did value the booklets by putting in the single color. Tons of redemptions, which kind of concerns me. How many redemptions are we going to see in National Treasures? If Russell Wilson isn't signing, wasn't T. Rich also a redemption Playbook?
Yep.
Ryan Tannehill redemption?
Yep. Nick Foles.
So that's a little concerning going into National Treasures because you got to assume that these guys are going to also be redemptions.
Unless they put their eggs in one basket with NT.
That's true. So, I mean, you would have a handful of other guys who are going to be redemptions. I don't know. I mean, we're getting at that point in the year where they're obviously either going to be running out of stickers or they're going to be running, I mean, just not getting the cards back in time. It did get released way too close to National Treasures. And I thought it was really going to affect our sales overall because people would be more inclined to save up their money and go with the NT over the Playbook. But, I mean, we were able to sell out our stuff, and I know Rich was able to sell out his stuff as well. But, I mean, we'll see. I think this, again, is going to be another one of those products that early in the football season, this is going to be one of the products where people go back to because they're going to still going to be able to get it, along with Valor.
Just like 2011, too.
Yeah, I think people are going to be going, oh, I can still get Valor and I can still get Playbook. So I think you're going to see a lot of this stuff being busted in, you know, August, September, October, stuff like that. So, overall, I would say, I mean, I think it was a step up from the previous year. And again, I really, really dig those acetate die cut auto booklets. Those look amazing. The Agnew, I've seen far too many of those. I think I've seen probably about I've seen at least 10 of those guys, and his auto is getting rough, man.
Yeah, it's lazier and lazier upon each release. But I had a theory, you figure
it would get better, but it's getting worse.
it's more egg on the face as it goes by. But I did have a theory I've shared with a few of you guys about why they released it so early. And maybe I'm just a glass half of full. I mean, released it so close to NT. Maybe I'm a glass is half full type of guy. But I'm thinking the reason they did it is because NT is going to dry up so fast that no one's going to want to pay, you know, $800 a box retail on NT. But the card store is going to have playbooks sitting at $200. So instead of spending $800 on NT, somebody's going to spend $400 on two boxes of Playbook. So, and it's going to be more readily available for dealers, distributors, breakers. So it's going to be easily accessible as opposed to National Treasures being $3,000 a case or whatever it may be. So I think that might have been their strategy at Panini is let's go ahead and release it a week right before, catch some buzz. NT is going to come out, and for the first 3 days of NT, maybe people forget about Playbook for a little while, but I think it's going to be prevalent next week because NT is going to be so hard to get.
I agree. I definitely agree. Can I say one thing, though? On a side note, with booklet cards in general, I mean, it wasn't that long ago when the booklet card was, like, the card to get. It was like, oh, my God, he pulled a booklet. And I feel like when you water down, like, what's the next progression from a booklet? Like, is it going to, I don't know, a multi-page booklet? Is it going to be a novel? I don't know what to expect next. Like, I just, like, how much further is the booklet card going to go? if there's a million booklets out there and everybody can break this product at 200 or less per box, everybody's going to have booklet cards. And then if everybody has booklet cards, then it's not – the booklet card doesn't hold as much value or mystique or collectability over time. You know what I mean? That scares me a little bit in terms of booklets. Maybe that's why they muddle down the second booklet so much, because it makes the other – it makes the bigger hit look that much better in a single box break.
Right.
It makes the autographed booklets that much more collectible. You know, if everybody's like, oh, well, you know, I have four booklets, but they're all just patch booklets. I can't wait to get an autographed Andrew Luck booklet. You know what I mean? It makes the autographed booklet that much more collectible. I don't know, but just food for thought. I know that it wasn't that many years ago at all, to where, you know, you pulled a booklet and it was like, oh my God, I can't believe we just got this. Like, I don't even have a holder for this. What do I do? You know, so I don't know. That's just me, I guess.
I hear you.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Yeah, with Playbook, you're getting, you know, the two books per box. So it is, you know, it's kind of like the age-old kind of problem with cards is kind of what happened in the 90s is card collecting got very popular, so they kept making more and more and more of them. And then, you know, at some point people didn't, you know, and then it started with, you know, gold foil parallels and then autograph cards and jersey cards, and we've seen how diluted just the kind of a regular jersey card is. I mean, those can be like, you know, less than a dollar sometimes.
Right.
It's almost
not that long ago. Not that long ago, everybody wanted – I mean, if you didn't have an autograph-heavy set, you were collecting the patch cards from that set or the relic cards from that set.
Right.
I mean, people really wanted those relic cards. Now, you pull a relic card, and it's numbered to 99 or less, and it's like, meh, you know, it's a $5 card. Even on a bigger player, it's like a $5 to $10 card. I mean, you know, 5, 6 years ago or 4 years ago, even, you know, that's a $30, $40, $50 card when it came out. You know what I mean? So I can already see the, you know, the decline in the collectability of a particular type of card. And, you know, Playbook's one of those sets that I mean, I love it, and it has its place, don't get me wrong, but I feel like it might be watering down the collectability on certain types of cards like booklets. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope that they take note of that and they pull back on any other releases having booklets, because we just had two products that were big, Playbook and National Treasures Baseball, that had, you know, National Treasures had a book in every box too. So it's like, you know, let's make sure that they don't turn it into what we happened in the 90s. I don't think it'll ever get to that point, because new rookies every year, but let's just hope that they don't try to overdo themselves every year. Let's take baby steps to get to some of these milestones.
or niche them to the products, you know, niche them to Playbook. National Treasures has book cards. Not Prestige, not, you know, Contender Certified, those kind of other brand elite, you know, leave them for your, you know, kind of higher end kind of products, or a set like Playbook, which is kind of designed for book cards, and then National Treasures is obviously high end. I would hope that they, you know, I hope 2013 Prestige doesn't have, you know, even rare book cards. It's like, you know, like Rich was saying, it just kind of waters it down a little bit.
Well, I mean, just like you just said, I mean, you can get booklet cards out of Gypsy Queen now. You can get booklet cards out of, don't they have them in Heritage as well?
I think so.
I feel like it's one of those things that they're just trying to, like, that's the new niche, that's the new thing, like that's the highly collectible card is the booklet card. So my question is, where does it go from there? You know what I mean? What's the next step from the booklet card? What's the next big thing that you're going to be able to collect? I mean TC with the video cards, is that something that's really going to catch on? You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen. I know Upper Deck did a video card before that, and I don't know, until they can get the technology where they can put it in a pack, I don't think it's going to take off, because it's a bummer pulling a redemption card of a sweet video card that you, especially if you're doing a break, it'd be awesome to be, I think we've talked about this in another show, but it'd be awesome to go ahead and pull that book card live and then show the video on video, you know, so maybe they, if the technology gets there, you know, but I don't know. And on a side note, Jayhawk mentioned that what would happen, could you imagine if Agnew was at the National with his own table this year?
Where do I sign? I will be first in line.
That would be free. That's all I know.
At least he wasn't a redemption this year. He signed everything.
Nope.
That's true.
Shouldn't take him long to sign everything, that's for sure.
I think he Jayhawk said he'll do it for $100 Taco Bell gift card, possibly.
Deal. Sign him up. Get Jayhawk, you know, there, and Jayhawk can kind of be the facilitator. He can kind of be, you know, facilitate the line and, you know, kind of manage the whole thing. I think that would be a good gig, too.
You know how many hoops packs you can get for a $100 Taco Bell gift card? Man, down to get a couple Kyries out of that Taco Bell set.
You can come up right there. You can come up.
Well, you want to get into Gypsy Queen real quick? I know it's not a product that's, you know, obviously it's base set driven. It's not as sexy as the last two we just talked about, but we'll briefly touch upon it if you want to go ahead and lead us into discussion on that.
Well, Gypsy Queen is so, it must be a pain in the butt for you guys to break it. You know what I was really curious about is National Treasures Football. Everybody wants some. I want some cards. I'm not going to be able to afford a box or let alone a case. But, God, I'd love to get into a break. And I want to know, I heard all about at the summit how a product gets allocated and National Treasures is at the top of the list in terms of product getting allocated. So, God, let's say I had the money to buy, God, I'd love to open 10 cases of National Treasures football, and you would think, oh, well, all you got to do is, you know, you just have your wholesale license, you call up all these guys, should be no problem, right? But I know that it is a problem, and that for you guys, it's got to be just a nightmare because, and I guess the main thing that I want to know is, when do you know how many, I'm sure you guys could do 10 cases, 20 cases if you could get it all, but when do you exactly know how many cases that you're going to get, and then how does that complicate things for you as you're trying to pre-sell stuff, you're trying to generate some hype, and you really don't even know, you know, how much you're going to get of this stuff. So I guess,
well,
this is such a kind of a marquee product that this is a kind of a big issue.
Well, this is what you got to do. So first of all, you got to drive down the street. You got to talk to Paco on the corner. Paco then sends you to Julio on the other side of the street, who then sends you to this guy, and then he finally gives you your numbers a day before release. That's how it works.
Well, I was gonna say, when is it release?
Tomorrow.
Release tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll let you know. We'll let you know tomorrow. Well, how much we get?
Good answer.
But it involves, I think, some hula hoops, jumping through them, and then, you know, there's probably a flaming hula hoop at the end you got to jump through. It's something along those lines of getting your order filled and then standing in line. And if you're the best fluffer at your certain distributor, then they might get you what you deserve, so to speak. But, yeah, it's tough. I mean, on this side of things, I mean, we had to pre-sell National Treasures about I think we pre-sold it like 4 years ago for this year. No, I'm just kidding. It was probably about 5 months ago we had to turn in our numbers. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's going to be a decent product, but they base it on your numbers of what you spend on Panini products per distributor. And then they also, right. And then they also, there's some kind of secretive, like they say that, they, like my one distributor told me that they had a pre-order of 120 boxes or whatever. Well, they're only getting 70 from Panini, right? So then they got to determine customer A gets this much, customer B gets this much. This guy's a new guy. He's not going to get any, or he'll get one box out of his 10 cases. And they say there's a lot of speculators. There's guys that don't buy everything, that they only buy like products like Tribute or Museum or National Treasures because they know they're going to be able to turn around and flip it. So a lot of distributors are smart on those guys, and they don't give them anything, or they'll give them one box maybe. So if a guy orders 10 cases, they're going to go, aha, you never ordered from us. We're not giving you anything. So they take care of their loyal customers, which is good. But then there's also the back end aspect of, you know, A, they only give me this amount of my order, but then next week it's available for $700 more a box. So where did that come from? Did that not come with the original order? They say they reordered it, but no one really knows.
Right. The famous reorder before release. That's my favorite line. We have to charge you $75 more a box 2 months before a product comes out because we have to reorder more. Well, how are you reordering more if it hasn't come out? What are you ordering? What exactly are you ordering? There's nothing to order. So how are you reordering more? That tells me that you're allocating somebody else out of what you already know that you're getting. So every time that I need more product, somebody's getting less, which really bothers me because I know if I were that guy that were getting less, I'd be pretty darn unhappy. You know, not everybody is able to spend $20,000, $30,000 a week on product just to up their allocations, and some people are. And the people that are the people that get the most cases. That's basically what it boils down to. People need to realize that some consumers don't know this, and that is two people get allocated every time something gets released, a high-end product, okay? The distributor gets allocated from the manufacturer, and then the distributor allocates the customers. So it actually gets allocated two times before it actually gets to our hands, to the retailer's hands. So you're actually a cut of a cut. You've already been divvied, and then you're divvied again, and then you get your cases. And then, you know, what Doug will agree with me on this one, and the famous line is, you know, release day is going to come out, okay, and we're going to get our cases, and then we're going to call up and we're going to ask for more, and they're going to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best. That's the best. The best thing in the world. They all do it. I don't care who it is. It's fine. Some distributors are better than others. Some distributors are worse than others. It is what it is. They're all pretty much the same. They all play the same game. They only get about four products a year that they're able to do it with. I get it. I understand. They have a huge company with huge overhead, and they make very little profit. And when they're able to make that profit, they're going to. So I get it. It's the game. You have to play the game in order to even – In order to get anything at all, you got to play the game. So when my pre-orders come up, because I know they're going to allocate Triple Threads football, okay? My pre-orders come up for 2013 Top Series 1, I'm ordering seven cases out of the gate. It's just the way it is. I'm ordering seven cases, and chances are I will have 2013 Tops football until 2014 comes out. And it's the same thing it's true. It's a true story. Yep. And people don't realize that. You have to sit on product that is low-end product that you order across the board to up your allocation. You have to do it. It's the game they all play, and you have to kind of just fall in line. There's really no other way to do it other than dealing with four, five, six distributors across the nation and trying to get three cases from each of them. And I know multiple people that actually do that. It's a lot of work. You're on the phone all the time, all the time. You're just on the phone, literally just take a day every week and cross it off the calendar, and you are on the phone that day and putting in pre-orders. And it's just, it's the game you have to play. And, you know, if you want to please your customers with high-end product, that's what you have to do.
And I hope I didn't paint the picture of distributors of being, you know, slimy car salesmen, because, I mean, the fact of the matter is for every tribute case that they make more money on, they sit on a product like Golden Age because they ordered 15 ordered 15 cases of Golden Age. So, you know, in an ideal situation, if every product sold out, they maybe wouldn't have to do this, but they're looking at it like they're only making 5% to 10% or whatever their margins are. They got to take what they can get. So unfortunately that gets filtered down to us, the card shops, you know, everybody across the board. So, but I mean, if a product's allocated, that means it's going to be a decent product too, so it filters down to collectors. So if it's allocated on our end, more than likely it's going to take off. There's some instances where I feel like some of the companies are playing games with allocation, like a product like Bowman Signatures that came out this year, which was a football product. It was the very first football product that was released this year by Topps. It was five autographs, and Luck, Griffin, all these guys were in the set. I think we got allocated like 30% of our order, and I think I had to pay like $170 a box when it was like pre-sale was $110 or something, just so I could fulfill my case that we pre-sold on our site. And then it turns out the product was just dumpy, and I think they knew that, and they held back product to increase product on release. So I don't know.
They're still sitting on it.
Right, and now they have a ton of it. So if they were allocated at the beginning, why is there still more of it? So that's the only question. It's only happened in one product that I've seen that they got so much buzz, and it was the first 2012 rookie product of football. So it was like out of the gate first, we want to sell it. And I think they used the allocation as a strategy. And I mean, I had customers trying to get it from me, and I was like, I can't even get it. And then it came out, and it was a turd. I mean, it was a crap in your mouth kind of product. So.
Would you advise collectors upon hearing this news that these distributors, you know, they got to make their money, and they're going to get this National Treasures. They're going to cut you your few cases at a good price. But then when you go to reorder, it's going to be Lord knows how much more for this 2012 National Treasure. It could be $100, $200 a box more than what you paid. Would you advise collectors to get in on your breaks when you first list them? Because you're getting a better price. They're getting a better price probably by and large. Is it a good idea, at least with these hot products, to get your order in for these breaks really as soon as possible? Because the price is going to skyrocket. I mean, everybody knows the price is going to skyrocket on these National Treasures cases in about 24 hours.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, Dan, if you want to take that one, I think that would be, definitely.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. We've seen a lot of instances where we basically put stuff up a couple months in advance, and we see that it gets allocated, and at the price that we're selling at, I mean, it's a steal, because I know that when that product gets released, it's going to be close to like a quarter or even double the price what we had it listed at, just because it's going to cost so much more for us to do it, to order it. So, I mean, the first cases that are always listed, that's the best price that we get. And that's the best price that you're going to get. And then the next case, maybe a little bit more if it's a product that takes off. But it could also work the opposite. I mean, products do go down as well. It could be, you know, something falls flat on its face, it completely devalued, then the second time we may get a better deal on it because there's products sitting at a certain distributor or something like that on the shelf, and they're trying to get rid of it. So it could work both ways. But for the most part, if you know, I mean, there's staples every year. There's Triple Threads, and there's Tribute, and there's NT Football. These are always going to get allocated, it seems like. A Bowman Jumbo Baseball is another one. These are always going to get allocated. So you want to jump into those as soon as you can, because when they get allocated, we get less. If we have to order more, the price is going to be more. It's pretty basic.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what's funny is it, you think about it, like, I think we talked about this, I don't know if we talked about this on this show or an earlier podcast, but it's kind of like when they pre-sell us this product, right? So like they come up with their spiel. It's kind of like if somebody went to your door, knocked on your door and said, I've got this amazing box of stuff. I can't tell you what's in it, but it's $1,000 and I guarantee you it's going to be great, but I don't know what's in it, but it's $1,000. How many do you want? And us, we're like, oh, we'll take 8, we'll take 9, we'll take 10. But I can't tell you who's on the – there's no checklist for it yet. But I think this guy's going to be in it. But 4 or 5 months from now, it's going to come out. Just give me commit to 10,000 now. I mean, could you imagine if somebody knocked on your door and said that? You would just say, yeah, whatever, go to the next house. Screw you. But it's just – we basically purchase these products blindly, like 4 to 5 months in advance. I mean, they're staple products, like –
They've all been pretty solid, but what about like I think it was like 2011, 2012. There was like a lot of bait and switch. It was like the sell sheet and what ended up actually coming out on a checklist were, I mean, night and day. I remember I think it was 2011 Topps Pro debut.
Yeah.
Remember that
yeah.
was like, that was supposed to be huge. There was going to be tons of Harper, tons of your boy, Jameson.
Tan, yeah.
Tan. There was going to be Machado. There was going to be tons and tons of guys. Checklist was going to be stacked. They ended up coming out, I think there was like, there was no Tan, no Machado. I think there was only like five Harper autos. And in the whole set, and they were pushing this one on one like Harper auto that was in it, and that stuff tanked. I mean, you can go to a distributor now and probably get that for like $35 a box. Well, not now because I think there's Trout in there, but at one point you can get it for like $35-$40 a box.
Yeah,
but I mean, and it seemed like it was like that with Marquee as well. Marquee was the old like bait and switch and. This year, I mean, 2012, we didn't really come across too much of that. It seemed like the sell sheet and what came out was pretty close. So I think everybody who was complaining about it, you know, it didn't fall on deaf ears, and some of the manufacturers, you know, kind of steered away from doing that because that was really pissing collectors off.
Definitely. Well, I do want to mention before we can continue talking about this stuff, but I did want to mention that LaytonSportsCards.com is doing a 10% off on all the products if you use the code SportsCardLive, all capital letters, all one word, SportsCardLive, 10% off, LaytonSportsCards.com. I think he's got NT, got some Marquee basketball, bunch of stuff on the site. So definitely take advantage of saving some money on LaytonSportsCards.com. So, but we can continue. Ryan, did you have any more questions to kind of lead us into here?
What's the next product on the agenda here? Is there anything else coming out? I guess it's this. Oh, Chops Tribute Baseball.
Yeah,
coming out tomorrow as well. Well, last year I know the hit card was encased in a special holder. This year they've kind of done away with that. There's a few less parallels. I haven't seen a whole lot of the cards live. I think there are a few actually on eBay right now, and some people got the product a little early. What do you guys think the hype and the buzz for Tribute Baseball is? Rich, we'll kind of start with you. How many cases are you going to be doing, and do you kind of sense some hype and excitement for the product?
Well, this is another product that steers right back towards the last conversation. I'd also like to say we could probably do, I would love to be on a show that actually talked all about allocation and distribution. Because I can talk about, I could seriously talk about this. I get heated about this. I have very, very strong opinions about allocation. So next time you guys want to talk about that, please, please let me know. I would love to chat about that. Secondly, I'm excited because the last thing we got to wrap our hands around was NT baseball in terms of high-end baseball, which was, it still is amazing. But this is the first Topps release in a while since Bowman Sterling, right? High-end wise. So, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it doesn't disappoint. I have, let's see, we're doing three master cases on release day, which is tomorrow. So, yeah, we're doing three master cases. One's broken up into 2 4-box cases just to drop the price point for some people. And one's a random and then another 8-box, or the first 8-box is a picker team style. So, I'm very much looking forward to it. I like the design. I think it's a little – Sterling-esque, if you will, Bowman Sterling-esque. I think the cards look like the same technology with that glossy front, the shiny plasticky front. The gold looks sharp with the auto on card. I think that's a nice approach. It stands out nicely. It pops with the gold and everything. I think that's cool looking. I'm very much excited to see the eye black and the like the batting glove cards and whatnot. I think that is pretty cool. I'm assuming maybe that's where things are heading, like we were speaking of before, not to segue back or anything, but, like, I mean, that's the next evolution of card, is getting those full memorabilia-type card into the product. It's like, you know, like half a batting glove on the one picture, Ricky Henderson batting glove, I believe it is. Bat barrels, bat knobs, one of ones. There's a lot of chase cards in this product. There's a whole lot of chase cards. I think that'll really carry this product. You know how it is, guys. I mean, you know, they say there's a chase card in the product, and everybody's going to rip it until they get it. So
yep.
I feel like until a lot of those knobs and barrels surface and those memorabilia cards surface, I think it's going to stay very hot for quite a while. I'm looking forward to opening it. I can't wait.
Yeah, really, I mean, cool. I actually...
The batting gloves are really cool because it's a left hand and a right hand of the same guy. So they're one of one, but there's actually two of, like, I think it was BJ Upton had him in there. But it was actually his left hand glove and his right hand glove, which I thought was
right.
Really cool. And the eye black cards look really sweet. It's kind of like a lot of players wear the little sticker eye blacks now instead of painting them on, but it's like a little sticker, and I think the David Wright picture they showed, it had his number on there, and they autographed him on card, and the on card kind of autograph checklist is freaking amazing. I mean, they've got a lot of, you know, and they kind of have to fill it out. They've got to have some legend names, and then they've got to have some lesser names just to kind of fill out the set. But it's really amazing, and the cards look, I mean, even from last year, the autographs from that set are just really stand out and really, really nice, and I even have a few. Doug, what do you think about Tribute and are the brights looking burning bright for Topps Tribute here tomorrow?
Well, I definitely think there's a need for high end baseball. It's coming out at the right time. I mean, I'm looking at a 6-box break on Blowout. Obviously, somebody got it early, which is another section that we should talk about at some point. But looking at some of the autos, I mean, the guy got a Ty Cobb Bat Relic number to 25, so that's a good value. Looks like the autos he got was Freeze, Cargo, Billy Butler. He got a Jerkson Profar auto, Jim Rice, Craig Biggio, Trevor Bauer, Terry Pendleton, Maury Wills, Madison Bumgarner. He got a Bob Gibson number to 24, Jim Abbott number to 5, Rizzo number to 15. The design didn't really change a whole lot. I still like the design. It's a kind of a silhouette of the player on the left of the card with a little bit of color in the background, and then just a complete blank space of where they can sign their autograph. So I think the design, you know, it's not broke, don't fix it. So it looks like they kind of continued that look. I do see a lot of single-colored relics, but, I mean, that comes expected because you can't put a 5-color relic in every box. So, you know, this is a 6-box sample size, so I can't wait to see some of the eye blacks, some of the glove cards, the bat knobs that are going to come out tomorrow, and, you know, the masses bust this stuff. So I don't think it's going to be I can't see it being a bad product by any stretch.
And I lost track. I was checking my NBA stats, admittedly, that I'm frantically trying to win a fantasy basketball league, so I've, like, had to see what Goran Dragic was doing in the first quarter there. Now, you know, one thing I want to ask you guys is, I think somebody said that in one case of Gypsy Queen, there were 3 of the bat knob cards, and I think there were only 25 total bat knob cards. I don't know if you guys heard of that, and how does that kind of – what is I don't know if that's confirmed or not. I thought I saw somebody mention that 3 bat knob cards in one case. Somebody got 3 bat knob cards in one case of Gypsy Queen, the 101 bat knob cards, and I don't think it was a breaker or anything. It might have just been a random person or something. But how does stories like that, you know, have you guys had an instance where you guys, I mean, it's kind of great. You're doing a break and you get some kind of like loaded case situation. It must be kind of a good feeling. But on the other hand, maybe some other collectors are getting shorted, or does that kind of play with you guys a little bit, or have you had an instance where that happened to you guys?
I mean, there has been. I mean, we always use the term front-loaded. You know, we think, oh, you know, and I don't think it does happen, but it just it does seem like it happens sometimes where you, you know, front-loaded meaning the first couple cases coming out on a release day, you know, you get some ridiculous hits. I know there was a platinum case last year that we did, just a six-box platinum case, and we got, like, 3 1-of-1s. We got a platinum 1-of-1 of Trevor Bauer, of Mike Trout, full piece of the jersey out of 5, and then, like, a – another 1-of-1 all-in-one six-box case, and then everything. Ever since then, with platinum, we didn't get anything. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a great thing for people in the break. You know, I would love the love to be spread around. I mean, there's that funny story about the 17 Jesse Winkers. If you don't know the background,
yes, I remember that. I remember.
Yeah,
we got a problem here.
Yeah, with the guy. It's a breaker. I don't remember which breaker it was, but he was doing a single box, or it might have been a case. I don't know, but the first box. Out of 18 autos, he pulled 17 Jesse Winker autos.
So, I mean, with the Reds. That's great for the Reds. Yeah, I mean, the Reds, yeah, just came up fat.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
yeah,
it's
Reds
funny,
killed
I mean,
it in that case, man.
And now, if it was 17 Bryce Harpers, would it be much of a complaining issue? I don't know.
Oh, boy.
You know, so, I mean, it never happens where it's 17 Babe Ruth, relics or. You know, 17 Yu Darvishes. It's always the opposite, where it's the less collectible guy that gets in there multiple times. So,
you know, we really should have Rich on. We should have a discussion on the allocation, and when we should have talk about, like you said, with the release dates. And some guy, I mean, it used to be really bad. I mean, it's just the day before now that people are getting tribute. But I remember back a couple of years ago, you could get tribute a week early sometime. You'd see cards pop up randomly and stuff. Guys
right.
would get randomly. And then the retail stuff's even worse. I mean, Gypsy Queen, Heritage, and Series 1. I mean, it gets to Target and Walmart sometimes a week and a half early. And I know it doesn't impact you guys too much, but for people maybe who are rip and flipping or the hobby shop, if you have a hobby shop or like Rich does, I mean, shoot, people are going into Target and Walmart because, hey, he's got the cards. Why don't you have the cards? You know, well, shoot, I've got to wait. You know, I'm not on Walmart and Target's schedule. So,
well, we dealt with that last week, and I'm not going to name the breaker, but there was a breaker that had Playbook on Wednesday. Well, Playbook's supposed to release on Thursday. I mean, you could imagine the unfair advantage that somebody that has it early. I mean, you could realistically, you could go through 20 cases. If I had NT right now and I sent out a tweet that I have NT, I got 20 cases right now. I mean, it would be insane.
Out.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And people would, I mean, first crack at it. It's kind of like if Target got Twilight a week early, you know, or something. I mean, you could imagine the sales of that DVD. I mean, that's on a larger scale compared to cards, but you know, it definitely is an unfair advantage when it comes to breaks. Retail stuff for a break standpoint doesn't really affect us too much. But there, I mean, I noticed there's some guy doing National Treasures tonight at 9:30. Well, that maybe it's 12:30 Pacific. So I don't know. Maybe that's okay. But, it is definitely an unfair advantage. And it seems like it's cheating to me. I mean, you're cheating the system. You're trying to get a quick buck on something. I don't know.
I'll
that's
tell just you, the other side to that. Has anyone ever seen, and I feel like this is karma, but has anyone ever seen, like, oh, we're breaking this a day early, and then they release it, or they do it, and they list it, or whatever, and picture it. Has anyone ever seen, like, oh, my God, he pulled the Babe Ruth bat knob a day before release time? It's always a crappy case. I swear to God,
true.
It is always a crappy case. Or at least I'd say 90% of the time, 90 to 95% of the time, it is a terrible, terrible, terrible break or a terrible case. And I feel like that's fate catching up with them. But at the same time, it's terrible for us. And I feel like it's actually bad for the consumer as well. I feel like it's bad all around. I don't think anyone wins. You're setting a market on eBay. You're setting a secondary market that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
So you're hurting yourself in that sense. So you might be pricing low. You might be pricing high. So if somebody's either getting ripped off or getting a great deal on a card, I feel like it also takes away completely from the excitement of release day. I know when I break a product, I announce it as release day, meaning, like, I mean, does release day have any meaning anymore? because of this. It takes away from it. I mean, it's just like a movie, you know. The biggest movie of the summer is coming out on June 17th. Well, if everyone goes to see it June 15th and 16th, I guess it doesn't really matter that you listed as coming out on June 17th. Nobody really cares then. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everybody
right.
already saw the excitement's over. The buzz is killed down a bit. You know, nobody really cares about it anymore. It's the same thing with cards. You know, your Topps says this product is coming out April 10th. Well, guess what? If everybody knows they can search eBay April 9th and it's going to be everywhere already, what's the point? Why not
right.
just, you know, just have release day be on a Monday? I think that would solve a whole lot of problems because nobody's going to pay and nobody's going to have it shipped to their house on Sunday. So if you ship it out Friday, nobody's going to pay a ton, and I do mean a ton of money, to have it express mailed, shipped to their house on a Saturday. That's not going to happen. So everybody gets it Monday. Why does it have to be a Wednesday that allows for 2 days of buffer between Monday and Tuesday where people can actually get the cards? So
I got a solution. Check this out. So you know when people rob banks, they put those little fake money things that blow up? Let's put a time-sensitive
yes.
ink explosion in the box. Boom, paint all over your cards, all over your
yes.
face, you're done. That's what
a
they
fake,
need to do.
A fake bat knob, a fake Babe Ruth bat knob that explodes ink into your face when you open it.
Yeah. Could you imagine a YouTube video or somebody doing it live? Like, oh, that's hilarious.
That would be epic. I would love it.
Well, I want to. We're getting close to running out of time here, so I wanted to wrap this up with you, Rich. But wanted to again mention, if you go on LaytonSportsCards.com and you check out, and there's a little coupon code section. If you type in "Sports Card Live" all in capital letters, one word, you get 10% off on your break. So, wanted to go ahead and thank Rich for joining the discussion and coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it. It was a really good discussion, and we'll have to do more, like some of the topics that we said we'd talk about later. We'll have to bring you back on for it.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on again. I had a blast. And, we have plenty more topics to go over next time. I'd love to be a part of it. And, Dan, I hope your sippy cup is full for the evening. You guys have a good night.
Take care, buddy.
All right, Rich. Take care, man.
All right, guys.
Bye. All right. Well, I wanted to. That was awesome. That was some good discussions we covered there and stuff. And I wanted to do a quick giveaway on our end because we do a gift certificate every show or a spot. So I want to give away a $30 gift certificate to any of our breaks at mojobreak.com. I used the thing for Rich, but you can also get a gift card here as well. So it's a kind of a double giveaway night. But what you have to do to win is you have to call in 347-855-8815. And what I want you to do is go on sportscardradio.com. Find the 2013 Topps Tribute Checklist and give me card number one on the base set checklist. So it's sportscardradio.com. You go to release date. You can find Tribute. You can even type it in a little search. Find it, 2013 Topps Tribute. And whoever calls in first will get a $30 gift certificate on any of our breaks on mojobreak.com. And just a quick rundown for tomorrow. We do have spots left in National Treasures 2012 football. We have a double case of Tribute 2013 and a case of 2007 Ultimate. So 72 hits, a little old with the new, good value. And we got some stuff on Friday, a couple mixers on Friday. We'll probably be doing a select break again. So definitely check out our schedule there. Let's see if we have anybody calling in here. Looks like 785. 785. What's
hey
up,
guys, it's Jayhawk.
Hey,
how are you guys doing tonight?
Good, man. How's it going, Greg?
Fantastic. Did you guys say card number 13 in Tribute?
Card number one on 2013 Tribute on the
right.
checklist.
Whitey Ford.
That's it. Ding, ding, ding. Got a winner.
Thank you, Sports Card Radio, for the quick answer there. And the Google machine.
Definitely. Definitely. On the Google machine, and they've always got the checklist stuff. So for you guys out there that are trying to figure out your checklist from your set, check out sportscardradio.com. Greg, I'm sure you're going to be spending it on some basketball products, so we'll go ahead and get you that $30 gift card through the email, and you can use it on anything.
Yeah, you guys got some great mixers coming up, so I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. Sounds good. We'll probably be doing some more select, too. So sounds good.
Well,
and,
you know I'm in on that.
Definitely. You count you in.
After getting the gold Lillard, I'm all in on that product.
You're going to come out ahead no matter if you skunk a couple times, three, four times. So you'll be still on the winning edge of that product. So, well, thanks, man. Thanks for calling in. We got another winner, and we'll be probably seeing you on the feed tomorrow or at some point.
Yeah, I'll try to use this on trivia just to keep the mojo going.
There you go. Sounds good, man. Well,
all right. Have a good one, guys.
You too, man. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Bye. All right, another winner. That was cool.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Definitely. So, well, I think that pretty much rounds out the show for tonight. I hope you guys were thoroughly entertained and found out a lot about allocation. Hopefully we didn't give up. We gave away some of the secrets, but I don't know if it's too much of a secret out there about allocation. So we'll have another show based on some of those numbers. And definitely we need to create a forum on a forum thread on Sports Card Radio about the Topps redemption process thing and see who comes
you know
out
what?
Ahead.
You know what I'll do is I'll look into it. I'll look into all the other forums and stuff and see what people are posting, and I'll try to get like a consolidated kind of listing of kind of what has happened in this process, who's gotten what were they redeeming, what did they get, and I'll do that over the next week or so and try to monitor that a little bit to see and I'll either create an article or I'll put a forum thread or something and try to monitor that because I think that's interesting. I think it'd be interesting to see what cards are coming out of there. What are they worth? Are people putting them on eBay? Are people on eBay confused about it? You know, that's the whole other side, too. You put a card on eBay, and I've been seeing some Super Fractor one-of-ones that have no autograph. I think we've talked about them on the show, but some guy, I saw an eBay listing. He had about 20 of them, and he had some of the marquee players, and I was call them, you know, the Topps Vault test proof and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, sometimes you put a card on eBay and it can get very confusing. So I'd be interesting to see what these cards look like. Hopefully they're not all Jeremy Hellickson based autographs from 2012 museum collection.
I'm telling you, man, you do this, and I may be able to swoop up all 182 of them because I know who has them. So I could have the market cornered, and then I could start selling them, and I name the price because there's nobody to compare it to. So that's how I'm gonna roll. I'm gonna be the one stop shop for all your Jeremy Hellickson needs.
Well, you just
right
get them all. Yep, get them all.
Up
at $60, and then they have to go through you. You know, it's like
and you know what we didn't. You know what we didn't go over today? Our boy, Gary Payton, inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Oh man, I know.
Play the
That's what I'm talking about.
One of the nicest guys ever. Just the coolest. Would be like your boy next door. You come over, you know, have a drink with them or something. Gary Payton is just the coolest dude ever. So props to Gary Payton. I mean, just one of the realest guys out there.
Yeah, I'm naming my firstborn the glove.
Nice.
That's it.
I'm tempted to do that too, or Peyton, you know, Peyton or Gary, you know. So
no, just the glove.
Well, props to Gary Payton, and I got to get that other sound effect from him that we got in 2012 summit. So maybe we'll get that for next week. But I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. We're gonna go ahead and hit the show outro. Make sure you check out sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com, and thanks Rich Layton from Layton Sports Cards for coming on the show tonight and giving some of his input. And thanks for leading into the discussions today, Ryan. I appreciate it. And it was a good little review segment.
Yes, let's do it again. Like you said, we should have a whole show where we talk about allocation, a whole show where we talk about the shady release dates and all. Yep. I mean, we could just go on down the line and invite some other people on if they're kind of insightful in that area and stuff, because I think it's really interesting. It not only impacts you guys, but it impacts the collector as well, because in 24 hours, boxes of National Treasures football is going to go absolutely through the roof. If you didn't pre-order, if you didn't get in on a spot, on a break, you're going to be paying, could be 30%, 40%, 50%, 100% more than what you did, especially if this stuff comes out hot and it looks pretty good. I've got another 3,000 cards to go on the checklist to finish up the checklist. I'll have it up by tomorrow morning. But from what I'm looking at, I'm like, oh, this is cool. Emmett Smith, autographed kind of jersey piece 22 and veterans and rookies, and of course all the rookies, all the and Andrew Lux are numbered the same as the Nick Foles. So there's no discrepancy there. The parallels are numbered the same. At least that's what was documented on the Panini checklist. Panini has their full checklist up on their website. It's kind of in a tabular data kind of form, but Griffin wasn't, you know, SP'd or anything like that. Andrew Luck wasn't short printed. So it's going to be a, you know, you guys are going to see some amazing cards that are going to be worth a ton of money. This is a very exciting set. And then Tribute Baseball, too, is always really hot, too. And it looks equally as good. And I love the autograph out of that product, too. So very exciting day tomorrow for collectors. So hopefully we'll
tune you guys in and fill you guys in on our thoughts next week. Obviously, you'll see our videos up on YouTube and on Ustream. But we'll give you our honest opinions next week on both the sets. And I think there's some more stuff coming on next week. I mean, it's we're getting into the prime time season of releases with basketball, football, and then baseball heating back up. So we're gonna have a lot more to talk about next week for sure.
Yeah, I mean, next time we talk about it, I mean, the boxes may be up to like $800 a box. I mean, we'll see what happens. But I mean, if you can get one for like $600 right now, I never thought I would say that's a hell of a deal.
It's insane.
I mean. And tomorrow it could be $800, but before we go, there's a triple auto of Isaac Bruce, Kurt Warner, and Marshall Faulk, and I know Doug's going to pick that one up.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking for it right now.
It's like it's a greatest show on turf card right there, man.
That's
what I'm talking about.
You're going to be buying into some Rams breaks.
I'm just going to be searching eBay for it, man. That's going to be it right there.
Sweet. Well, we'll see you guys next week at 4 p.m. Pacific on same bat time, same bat channel. And follow us at Card Radio Live on Twitter and find out when we're going to be live, who we're going to have on, what we're going to be talking about. So thank you guys for hanging out with us. And thank those who downloaded on iTunes and listened to the archives. We appreciate that as well. We're pretty much out.
Later.
All right. Later.
Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.